This is the Kol Hadash Podcast. Originally recorded on October 3rd, 2024, Rabbi Adam Shalom's theme for the Rosh Hashanah morning service is technology, triumph or terror. What has the internet brought or wrought us? Will artificial intelligence come with more controls, or will it control us? This is the sermon from that event.
Have we planted the seeds of our own destruction? If you grew up in the shadow of nuclear weapons, you know that question. We who live today with social media, artificial intelligence, internet connectivity, we can ask the same question. When your Facebook feed shows you an ad for what you were talking about 2 hours ago, when your calendar auto-populates with an appointment for a flight you just bought, when Alexa and Siri are always listening and autocorrect knows what you are thinking before you do, you might ask, who's really in charge? Has all this technology become a golem, a human creation running amok that may destroy us all? Film director James Cameron of the Terminator movies recently said, I warned you guys about AI in 1984 and you did not listen. And then last week, he joined the corporate board of an AI company. Even if the sun is shining today, there is a gloom in the air, a feeling of foreboding and doom. The climate is changing with more extremes and more storms. The political center is weakened with more extremes and more storms. The ties that bind are fraying. The future is uncertain, and tomorrow may well turn out worse than today. To face these challenges, we need to affirm our belief that we are not doomed. We are still in danger. Our actions and our inaction have certainly made things worse. We absolutely need course correction. If we resign ourselves to believing that we are doomed, one of two things will happen. On one hand, we may leap at radical solutions that will turn out worse, like the Golem of Prague in Jewish folklore, created to defend the Jews against pogroms and then destroying everything in its path. We will seek a Messiah, a magical solution, a savior figure who promises everything and therefore is too good to be true. When systemic change then fails to appear, we will ignore tangible progress and surrender to cynicism and despair. On the other hand, if we say we are doomed, we will give up, throw up our hands, and surrender to fate. If we believe there is nothing we can do, then we will do nothing. We can always do something. That is a key plank of my faith in humanism, the power of humanity to act. The prophets and rabbis also believed in the importance of human action, even if they judged it through their theology. Biblical prophets are a mixed bag, claimed for many causes. They condemn social injustice, and they condemn theological infidelity, using the phrase, whoring after other gods, to express the Hebrew gods' jealousy. For the prophets, the consequences of human behavior are ultimately divine reward or divine punishment. We might say it is cruel to blame the destruction of Hebrew kingdoms on their own sins, but psychologically, at least it's a reason, cause and effect. To some, a world that makes sense, even if it is cosmically cruel, is preferable to a world without rhyme or reason or justice. The problem with this approach is that if disaster strikes, or when disaster strikes, more likely, do you fix your relationship with your God, or do you work with other people to change the situation here and now? The prophets promised cosmic redemption if we just prayed and fasted and blessed and believed strongly enough. That would save us. By contrast, what do humanistic Jews do if we do not pray? Put simply, we do. That focus on human action in this life is also a Jewish tradition. Here is a scene from the aftermath of the destruction of the Second Jerusalem Temple around 70 of the Common Era that shows a choice made by early rabbis. When the temple was destroyed, the number of ascetics increased among the Jews. They would not eat meat nor drink wine. Rabbi Joshua asked them, "Why do you not eat meat nor drink wine?" They said, "Shall we eat meat that used to be sacrificed on the altar when the altar is no more? Shall we drink wine which was poured in libation offerings upon the altar when the altar is no more?" Rabbi Joshua then said, "If that is so, then we will not eat bread anymore, since the meal offerings on the altar have ended." They replied, "We can live by produce alone." Joshua responded, "By your logic, we cannot eat produce since the bringing of first fruits has ended. We will only live by produce that was not traditionally offered. By your logic, we cannot drink water since the water libation has also ended." At this, the ascetics were silent. Rabbi Joshua said, "My children, come and I will tell you. To not mourn at all is impossible, for the decree of destruction has been decreed. But to mourn too much is also impossible. The sages will not issue a decree on the public unless a majority are able to follow it. Plaster your home with plaster, but leave a small amount unplastered as a memorial. Prepare what you need for a meal, but leave out a small item as a memorial." In other words, live life even as you acknowledge disaster. What will be may be, but negating this life to beg favor from the world beyond defeats itself. As we heard last night, if you hear a Messiah is coming while you are planting a tree, finish planting the tree first, then see about the possible Messiah. Human action to preserve life and to act righteously in this world does make a difference, whether or not cosmic redemption follows. We know that our actions change the world. If we are optimistic, it is because of past achievement and success. For all of the risks of technology and human innovation, without them, only a small fraction of us would be alive to celebrate a Jewish New Year today. I am aware of my ironies, the ironies in my warning of the dangers of technology through a microphone. We are live broadcasting and recording this service via computers through the internet. Most of us have more computing power and potential knowledge in our pocket than NASA used to reach the moon. Those here in Deerfield drove or rode in amazing vehicles powered by fire or by wind and sun. The electricity that cools this room and shines through these lights and amplifies my voice is produced by power plants, transmitting power through a grid over many, many miles. Most of us are alive because of the wonders of modern medicine and surgery, diagnosis and treatment, medications and devices that thin our blood, improve our immune systems, repair our bodies, tame our problems. The traditional special moments blessing, "Thanks a God, Shehechianu v'kiyemanu v'hikiyanu lazman hazeh," who has kept us alive and sustained us and brought us to this day. Considering the power people have deployed and discovered to lengthen life, I find a humanistic adaptation much more appropriate. Baruch ha'or ba'olam, Baruch ha'or ba'adam, blessed is the light of inspiration in the world and in people that has truly kept us alive and brought us to this day. Nothing comes from nothing, and everything has consequences. Just about anything can become a golem. That electricity that powers lights and devices and cars? In Illinois, there are five major sources of power: solar, wind, natural gas, nuclear power, and coal. Altogether, in 2023, they produced 185,000 gigawatts of electricity. That's about 75,000 round trips back to the future. Now, what was the balance among those sources? Wind was about 12%, coal was 15%, Natural gas, 16%. Nuclear power, 55%. And solar was 1%. I love my home solar panels, but all home solar put together added less than 1% to our total energy. Now, that's still 2,000 gigawatts, but it's only 1%. Nuclear power, 55%. Nuclear power is mostly clean. It uses radiation to heat water, and the steam runs turbines. So the only resulting emissions are steam and also leftover radioactive waste that may take thousands of years to decompose. So nuclear technology is a golem. It can diagnose and cure disease, it can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and it can blow up the world in a bomb or contaminate our air and water as waste, causing the cancers it cures. The golem of all golems today are AI and social media. We might call it anti-social media. Maybe you have friends or family or creators that you follow who challenge your worldview. But most of us gravitate towards media and people who make us feel good, who affirm what we already believe, who motivate us to be better rather than tell us that we are wrong. I'm old enough to remember, if not the dawn of the internet, at least the early morning of the internet. Some of us still hear that AOL automated voice, "You've got mail." 31 years ago, as a college freshman, I received my first email address. We imagined the internet would bridge cultures and break down barriers. It would increase and share human knowledge with lightning speed, and it would change the world. Change the world, it certainly has. We did not fully appreciate the short jump from information to misinformation, and the huge leap from facts, or facts, to actual understanding and truth. Artificial intelligence has learned from what people write. So now autocorrect has been made worse by artificial idiocy. It is unable to tell its from its and your from your because people can't either. Something I laughed about 30 years ago should have been more ominous. Like most freshmen, I made my email address my first initial and my last name, A. Shalom. One of my friends, because his Indian last name was 13 letters long, chose futon at yale.edu. He then made his screen name into Frank Utona. And Frank Utona started sending very weird messages to people in our dorm. It was believable, because what did we know about fake email addresses? I did not blame my friend for all the spam emails, the requests for gift cards that I've gotten in the 30 years since. And I apologize if a spoofer has pretended to be me and taken my name in vain trying to scam you. A few years ago, I received a fake email asking for money from Rabbi Sherwin Wein, a founding rabbi of humanistic Judaism who died in 2007. The best part was that the email from Sherwin ended, "God bless you." The internet is not truth. It is a loudspeaker. It is a magnifying glass that broadcasts my voice anywhere and everywhere. It also spreads lies, distortions, incitement, hatred. It makes us question who is really on the other end of the line. Today we can ask whether we can really believe what we see and read and hear, and it will only get harder. Someday, AI will figure out exactly how many fingers belong on hands and how many arms we actually have. And those deep fake videos will be even harder to tell apart from the real thing. Sadly, over the last 12 months, we have seen all of the promise and the peril of technology play out from October 7th onward. The armed forces of Israel had high confidence that its technology, its early warning system of cameras and sensors, could detect any problems. They did not realize that a failure of human intelligence could still happen. The mostly young women stationed at those observation posts reported unusual activities in the days before, and the mostly older men to whom they reported ignored them. When the attack actually happened, cell towers were targeted to disrupt communication. And at the same time, thousands of hours of video was shot, even live streamed, by Hamas and Islamic Jihad attackers and by Israeli civilians fleeing and fighting for their lives. We have seen the horrors of that day, the living hostages and the dead carried away. In the months since, the world has seen tremendous destruction in Gaza as Israel strikes back at Hamas. Targeting terrorists hiding behind civilians causes tragic deaths, period. And now, the rocket fire Hezbollah sent into northern Israel since October 8th has come home to roost, with similar consequences for those caught in the crossfire. All of this ongoing suffering has played out on the TVs, the computers, the smartphones of the world. Those videos do not show what would have happened in Israel without Israel's amazing rocket and missile defense technology. If Hezbollah and Iran's intentions were fulfilled, it would be very different. And yet, there are many who disbelieve what their eyes see. The denial of Hamas atrocities by advocates for Palestinians, the skepticism of Palestinian suffering by advocates for Israel. We turn to video to prove the reality of what happened and what is happening. And we are told, you are so naive to believe what you think you see. That's just what they're telling you happened. We saw this in 2012 with claims that small children massacred at Sandy Hook Elementary School were crisis actors. The quote, truthers, devastated bereaved families with claims it was all a ruse, a false flag operation to get stronger gun control. The lies started immediately, and it took a decade to get media personality Alex Jones to admit the shooting was real and to face consequences. This is not new or unique to our day. There are 9/11 truthers, and moon landing truthers, and COVID vaccine truthers. We shouldn't be surprised at October 7th truthers or Gaza war truthers. As AI images and deepfake videos get better and better, it becomes harder and harder to know what or whom to believe, let alone the problem of social media bubbles that get stronger and stronger every year, trapping our minds within epistemic circles that confirm what we want to be true. Who does the legwork to research the truth? Who calls out their own side when they cross the line between truth and exaggeration? There's only so much that fact checkers can do. Can we lay the blame for all of this at the feet of the internet and its moguls? Should we demonize Musk and Zuckerberg and Bezos and Jobs and all the rest? Smartphones are psychologically addictive by stimulating endorphins. And gummy bears play on our evolutionary love of sweet taste that helped us find ripe fruit. I love gummy bears, but I do not buy them every time I enter Walgreens, even though they're right by the register and on the way to the pharmacy. It is much easier to spread blame. It is far harder to take responsibility. That is one of the deep human insights of Rosh Hashanah. Looking above and beyond for forgiveness, atoning for supernatural sins, fasting for meat and wine and produce and even water, those are all part of the traditional approach to these days of awe and judgment. Yet the rabbis defining Jewish observance after the Jerusalem temple also declared there could be no divine forgiveness without human atonement and forgiveness. The need to repair human relationships, to own up to our own failings, to our fellows, to offer forgiveness when they repent to us, to be open to second chances, to believe them when they make amends, that is all action in this world, this life, between us and among us. Putting out a blanket Facebook apology, sorry for whatever I may have done wrong to whomever I may have wronged, that's the social equivalent of a general prayer thrown up to heaven, hoping for a cosmic reprieve. If it opens a conversation, great, but it's not enough by itself. It is no substitute for a face-to-face or even FaceTime-to-FaceTime conversation that clears the air and rebuilds trust. Virtual life is also real life, when it's direct and personal to other people. The internet, AI, technology, machinery, radioactivity, electricity, they are all tools. A hammer can destroy or it can build. A scalpel can harm or it can heal. Zoom can connect community, while Zoom bombing can ruin community. So what do you think of this sermon written by ChatGPT? Or was it written by Shalom PhD? I affirm it was written by me, but you can do your own research. This computer golem did not create itself. We have had our own part in it, and we still have some power. Try turning it off, just for fun, once a day. Try one day without cable news, or one day without internet, or one day without electricity, for that matter. If you take careful precautions, you will survive. Believe it or not, you might thrive. And when you return to technology after your Shabbat, your stopping, your moment of silence and stillness, you will remember what it felt like to stop the noise, the power you had to control the machines. You might come to like it. Of all the buttons on all the devices in all the world, off is the most important. As I did last night, I wish you a Shana Yoter Tova, a better year in the year just begun.
Thank you for listening to the Kol Hadash podcast. To learn more, support, and membership to Kol Hadash, visit kolhadash.com. To learn more about secular humanistic Judaism, visit shj.org.